Hey, good evening. I'm Jackie Beischer with the Astronomical Society of Kansas City, and this is the first webinar I've ever done, so take it easy on me. Normally, we would be out at Powell Observatory tonight, and the public would come down, and we'd have even hundreds of people come down to look through the telescope, and I'd have to do this program over and over during the evening. But tonight, just doing it one time. Our president, Rick Henderson, is working in the background tonight, so we're hoping everything goes well. I'm seeing a little thing on there that says I'm live on Facebook, so let's hope so. Let's see, now I gotta go over to my, oh, I forgot how to do it. I gotta move, share screen, go to this screen. There we are. Maybe I did it okay. Do you guys, you don't even know. It should say Powell Observatory and the Astronomical Society. So we'll get started. Hopefully. So tonight, the subject is galaxies, and that's a galaxy right there, and it's a pretty famous one. That's the Andromeda Galaxy, has a designation of M31, and those of you that know me, you know that that galaxy means a lot to me. So let's move right on. But before we go, like, there's Powell Observatory in Lewisburg, and we are closed because of the pandemic and the virus, and we'll see how things go, but we might reopen in the fall of 2020. So just have to keep going back to the website to see. Okay. Oh, and there's some pictures taken. If some of you've never been there, there's the observatory from a drone. The shutter on the dome is open, and you can see the 30-inch telescope in there. See how many people are there from the cars in the background. And then there's the little dome in the foreground where we have two other telescopes. And then down in the lower left, a lot of our members come down in that huge yard around the observatory and set up their telescopes. And finally, there's a young man looking through the 30-inch telescope inside the dome. And that's what you get to do also when you come down there. So hopefully we'll see you later in the year. Now those are galaxies there in that picture, and there's all different shapes and sizes of galaxies, which are giant clusters of stars. And once upon a time, they were all called nebulas because people with early telescopes or whatever would look up in the night sky and they might see a fuzzy thing through their telescope, but that just looked like other fuzzy things, right? They didn't know what they were. Then The big break started back in the early 1900s at Harvard Observatory. This gal there, Henrietta Leavitt, she was called a computer because she was hired to work there at the observatory for $10 a week. And I understand she got one 30-cent raise along the way. But her job was to study the photographic plates, their glass plates that the astronomers used on the telescope. And by the way, women were not allowed to use the telescope, but they were really good at doing this. And after a while, when she was studying all the data and stuff she was getting, she determined that there was this type of variable star called a Cepheid variable. And there was a relationship between the period from bright to dim and back, and it was related to the change in brightness of the star and the length of the period or the and all of that was all mixed together. And there's a graph down there that she made which showed this arrangement, which was really, really important. And here's the Andromeda Galaxy again. And now here's why it was so important. In 1924, Edwin Hubble, and yes, they named the Hubble Space Telescope after him. He was working at Mount Wilson Observatory at that big old 100-inch Hooker telescope. And he was looking at various things. He was checking what's called the Small Magellanic Cloud, which is actually a galaxy close to our galaxy. As a matter of fact, it's caught by our gravity. There's a large and a small, and their clouds is what that's their name, because and their name for Magellan, because when he sailed down the coast of South America, he was the first northerner to see that. And to him, they looked like clouds in the sky. So there was a little cloud and a big cloud. Very original. But she did this math and she was figuring out that it was over. Anyway, she had done that math. So he got to working at it. And one night he was looking at the Andromeda Nebula. And he was looking at a Cepheid variable in the Andromeda Nebula. And he did the calculations and he says, wait a minute, 2 million light years away? What? You know, this was a huge big deal. And they discovered then after that that a lot of these nebulas were actually other galaxies and they were far, far away. And yes, the galaxy got a whole lot bigger really fast. So, just a side note, Hubble was born in Marshfield, Missouri. They moved a lot of other places after that, but he was the discoverer of external galaxies in the expanding universe. So he's a pretty important guy. He deserved to have an important telescope named after him. So here's some galaxies. Now, these are all collections of stars and dust, and there they are, just beautiful, different shapes and sizes. The one in the top center is a spiral galaxy. So upper right is also one, lower left. In the middle, you have a, at the bottom, that's a barred spiral because it has that barred shape in the center. The one in the upper left is what we call an irregular. And you can see why. Whoops, hit the wrong button. Let's talk about a light year a little bit. If I shined a light up into the night sky, if I turned it on, where would that light be traveling at roughly 6 trillion, no, 186,000 miles per second? Where would it be in a year? It would be 5,878,499,817 miles away. A long place, long way, roughly 6 trillion miles. So it's really, really far away. So yeah, like the from the light from the sun, when it leaves the sun, it takes 8 minutes and 19 seconds to get to Earth. So a light year is a distance and not a time. But here's a I loved Carl Sagan. He was a one heck of a guy. And there are so many galaxies. Galaxies, he said, are as numerous as all the grains of sand on Earth. Well, since he said that, we've found that it's a lot more than that, even. He died in 1996. As a side note, I got to meet him down at, he came to Municipal Auditorium to give a talk one year. And because I had, there was a science teachers convention, and I volunteered to work at the Planetary Society's booth. And so I got to go backstage and meet him. Really, I just love that. Now, when they started classifying all of the galaxies, this is how Hubble did it. And he did it by their shape. On the left there in the red circle, those are ellipticals. So they're kind of almost round to really egg-shaped. And then on the top up there, there's the spirals up to the right. And they can be edge on, face on. It can be a really open spiral. It can be really concentrated. And then down at the bottom, you have the barred spiral. As you can see, there's kind of that bar shape there in the middle of the galaxy. So those are the three classifications. So in ellipticals, they go from very round, slightly oval, more flat, very flat, and almost disc-like. So that's how they classify galaxies. And there's the spirals. And then here's some more galaxies. the one in the upper left, you're seeing it edge on and you're only seeing part of it. And the one on the bottom is called the Sombrero Galaxy, and it has that dark dust lane going around it out on the rim. And that's just dirt and rocks and stuff like that. And there's so many of them in the night sky. And they're so beautiful. Here's another shot of some oddballs. Like in the upper right, you see those are two galaxies that are interacting with one another. They have come in contact. They were moving towards each other, and now their gravitational fields are pulling them apart. The one in the upper left, that's looks like two that have tangled too close. Ditto over on the left. And then there's just some other ones there that are just oddball. So now here's galaxy clusters. Clusters of galaxies are out there. There's so many clusters of galaxies, and there's so many galaxies. They're beyond what we can count. And you know, each galaxy, they're different sizes, but in our galaxy, the Milky Way, we have about, I've heard all different numbers, but I go with 400 billion stars in our galaxy. There's bigger galaxies, there's smaller ones, and then the number of galaxies is incredible out there. There's structures of galaxies that that astronomers have determined. So springtime at Hale Observatory is always a good time to see galaxies, because because of the way the solar system is oriented. So this is kind of just of a sketch, but you see a picture of a galaxy there and the solar system in the galaxy with the planet on the outside. So why do we see so many in the spring? Now, this is the one where I said, what do? I stop sharing here? Yeah, I think. Can you all still see me? I hope so. You see this galaxy right here? This is a model of a galaxy, and see how thin they are? Most of them are pretty thin like this, but they're big and round and spiral like this. And this is just a model of a typical galaxy. And if it was our galaxy, we'd be out here on the edge. Now at this time of year, let's say this is a little model right here of the solar system with the sun in the middle. And then that's the Earth in four seasons: summer, fall, winter, spring. So in the spring, and it shows the night of the Earth is the one facing out. So if we're situated in the galaxy, like something like this, then in the springtime, which it is now, we're sitting right there, we can see out of the galaxy and see much other galaxies much, much better. And then when it comes to be in the fall again over here, we'll be right in the plane of the galaxy. And at nighttime, we're going to be looking straight in the galaxy. And that's how I hope that was clear enough. I was trying really hard I couldn't find anything out on the internet that really explained it well. So let's see, get back to my show. Well, Rick, let's see, share. Yeah, there, I got it. All of us are learning here at the Astronomical Society. We're going to be real good at this before the year's out. I promise. Okay. Now, this is an artist's rendition of what our Milky Way galaxy would look like if you could go out into space and look back at it. Now, they have to guess about that other side back there, because we can't see it at all. We just are assuming that it'll be spirally shaped like this side is. Pretty good. They've gotten a little more sophisticated too on some of these maps. You can look them up on the internet if you're interested. Now, this is the Hubble Deep Field. Let's see, I'm trying to think here. I've got a Hubble Deep Field. What year was that? I'm looking here. Okay. So it was in 1995. And the way the story I heard it is that, astronomers around the world would purchase to buy time on the Hubble Space Telescope. And they had fixed the optics, by the way. And I guess some funding fell through. So the director of the Space Telescope Institute had a little pet project, which was that he wanted to take a long, long picture, long exposure of a part of the night sky that where there was nothing there, nothing, black. We'd never seen anything. And that was what he wanted to do. He wanted to take a picture and just see what they could find there. So for 10 days in December 1995, they took 342 different exposures of the same section of the sky. And then they put them together, and that's what they found. All of those are galaxies, every single one. Let's see, there's about 3,000 galaxies in that picture. Some are closer, some are further away. The reddish ones in the background are way, way out there. Way out. I didn't write down how far, but ooh, that was quite an eye-opener when they did this. And of course, then they had to do it a few more times to see what else there was out there. So there's the extreme deep field. And this was in another part of the sky. This was down in Fornax, the constellation in this in the southern hemisphere. And in this one, there's 100 red galaxies in the background that are really far out there, like close to. And also think about how far we're looking out there, like billions and trillions of light years away. But those are like were formed a long, long time ago. They say when the universe was about 800 billion years old, perhaps. The nearer ones are more like 1 billion years old. And this one, this particular picture took 11.3 days from, let's see, September 24th of 03 to 1 January 16th of 04, and 800 exposures to get that picture. Pretty cool, huh? So, it's just mind-boggling. And believe me, us that are interested in astronomy and into it, we can't put our minds around it either. So don't feel bad. So this is going faster than I thought it was going to go because I don't have people stopping me and asking me questions. But anyway, this is a picture of the USA at night. And that is light pollution right there, ladies and gentlemen. All that light that you're seeing there is shining into the night sky, and it's wasted. It's not doing anybody any good. Back in 1985, I believe, the International Dark Sky Association was formed by two astronomers, and it's gotten much bigger today. It's IDA.org and or darkskies.org. 2 years ago, we opened a Missouri chapter of IDA and getting quite active in doing this. But hey, look back at that picture again there of the USA at night. You can see Chicago, can't you? Around Lake Michigan. And then I just had that pop in. And then you can go down to the left of it and see St. Louis and Kansas City. And the little tiny blip to the left of Kansas City is Topeka. And then you can see Wichita. And there is Denver. But hey, what's that big blob of black that's over the northeastern United States? Look at that. Well, that was a huge power outage. There was some huge blast from the sun and it knocked out all the power up there in that area. And that was in August of 2003. I don't know if you remember that or not, but that was a pretty big deal back in those days. And by the way, there's some new you're interested, you can go to the International Dark Sky Association, but they've taken some good satellite pictures recently, and they're showing that actually, let's see, I might even have one here that I can hold up to show you. But yeah, we'll see if this works very good. But because everyone's staying home and there's not much lighting going on at night and such, the light pollution in the USA has dropped considerably. Can you see this at all? Yeah, I think the top part of the screen is before, and then the bottom one is after. And you can see the significant difference in the lights. That the bottom one was taken just recently. But, and also there's been report, because of that, I think you all have heard too, that there's not as many people out there driving around. So the air is getting really clean. And that's nice for astronomers as well, because we can see through our telescopes much better. It's kind of sad that the observatory is not open, but I think I'm going to have to sneak down there pretty soon one of these days. So anyway, that's all about IDA. And by the way, all that light pollution isn't good for insects and birds and bats. And there's been all kinds of issues throughout the world because of light pollution. Okay. So here we go. So I just wanted to give you an idea of what's going on in the night sky. If we were out at the observatory tonight, well, I wouldn't stay till dawn, but you guys could. But over in the dawn sky, you can see if that one, that picture goes to May 14th with the moon there on down in the lower left. But they haven't changed that much. You can find Mars pretty well. It'll be near the moon and it'll be reddish. And then just follow it up to the right and you'll find Saturn and Jupiter. And Jupiter will be the brighter of the two. Those two will not have moved at all. Well, they're moving, of course, but they're so far away that we won't detect it from this picture. So if you want to get up in the morning, if it's clear, it's not so clear now, you might be able to see those. And then looking west in May, and look at that's May 21st. No, the first picture is if you look at the west after sunset, you'll see the bright Venus. But it might be difficult to see Mercury because it's pretty low to the horizon. And west by May 21st, Venus is moving closer and closer towards the sun. Actually, it's not going to the sun. It's passing. If this screen is the sun and I'm Earth, then Venus is coming around the sun like this. So we're watching it approach between us and the sun, and then it'll disappear for a while. And then, you know, in a month or so, it'll be a morning star. Not a star, of course. So if you're interested in doing that, if that's clear. And then I wanted to thank you for tuning in tonight. And I hope that you could come down and see us in the fall. I hope we're open. I have to make a statement too, that we would appreciate any donations, because when people come down to PAL, they donate. And that's how we really support the expenses of it. So if you are so moved that you want to give us a donation, you just go to that website, askc.org, and you can do it right there. So let's see. Let me check with Rick and see, he's in the background. And Laura, go to Q&A. Is there any Q&As out there? Nothing? No questions? Oh, to see nebula from your backyard. It depends on where you're. Oh, he says, what capabilities do I need to see nebula from my backyard? That's the question. Well, you have to, depends on where your yard is. You know, if you're in the middle of the city, you're only going to be able to see the really bright ones, like the Orion Nebula, those really bright, big and bright ones you can see. And right now, your chances are better because the sky's clear and lights are down. So, you're better to go see nebulas out in the country. And you can always go down to where the observatory is in Lewisburg, in Lewis Young Park. It's northwest of the city. And they you can set up a telescope there if you'd like, and you can see it a whole lot better. By the way, while I'm on that kick, it's not as good as it used to be there because Overland Park has gotten so much bigger and the light pollution dome is really bad. So we are in a big campaign moving forward to build a new observatory complex. We have a pretty good location down south and east of Lewisburg, where the skies will be much darker, and we want to build a really nice bigger observatory and have an outdoor amphitheater and maybe a planetarium. So check us out on the on our website on that too. So someone says that there is an ISS. The International Space Station is flying over tonight just after 10 o'clock. I wonder which way it's going, from where to where. There was a good one here not too long ago, and it was coming from the southwest going northeast. So would it be going the same way? I don't know. And let's see. Rick is going to have to answer the question about how many are tuned in tonight, because I'm not seeing that. But what is this more? Oh, let's see. Yeah, a 1012 is the flyover. Sorry, still learning. Okay. I hope some of you are watching by Facebook. I'm looking here. I hope it worked. There was no invitation that way, but we will always send out emails, and you can always check our website. Well, we're going to be on the first and third Saturdays of every month, all the way into the fall, until we decide whether to open up or not. We'll see. Yeah, so you can always do that. Oh, here we go. 10:12, the International Space Station tonight will be at 10:12. It's visible for 6 minutes. It comes 48 degrees high. So maximum height is 48 degrees. It starts at above west southwest. So that if you figure out where west is, and just a little south of there. And yeah, it's coming, going to come up pretty high in a loop to kind of high in the northeast, and then it's going to set no, 11 degrees above northeast. So it's going to be a west. No, okay, it's going to go from the west southwest to northeast. So it's kind of the same. You can't miss it, but you know, it's going to have to clear off too. So let's see. I don't know how many we have on the actual webinar, but it looks like there's 27 people, 27 on signed up on Facebook, which is good because oh, why is the galaxy Andromeda important to you? Well, because it's kind of famous anyway, but I'll tell you the real story. Years ago, a group of us ASKCs, we bought some land down south of Osawatomie, Kansas. It was about 20 acres, and we developed it as our own little campground. And we built permanent piers for our telescope, and we had a clubhouse, and we'd go down there on all the good weekends and see stuff. And I had a deck around my pier, so all I had to do is come bring my telescope, plop it down, and I was good to go. Well, one night I stayed up really late, and because I was waiting for Andromeda actually to come up, because I really wanted to see it down there in the dark countryside. It's visible naked eye. If you put your fist up in the sky, it covers, that's how big it is. It's that big. You know, it covers like a good area of the sky. So I was waiting for it, and sure enough, it finally got up high enough, and I took an astrophotograph of it. And I was sitting there looking at it, and my mind just wandered, and I thought, wow, you know, I kind of think that the possibility of other intelligent life in the universe is very high, very probable. And that galaxy is bigger than ours, or about the same size. And I thought, there's got to be planetary systems around a lot of those stars. There's got to be other life. And then I go, whoa, I thought, I wonder if anybody's looking back over here tonight, wondering if anyone's looking at them. And it was this big, and right then, this pack of coyotes came running across the observing field. So it was a really big moment in my life. One of those gotcha moments when you realize something. And anyway, so that's why I love Andromeda. And if you ever see the license plate on a car zooming around town, M31 on the back, that's me. That's my email address as well. So let's see. Okay, there's somebody that is going to be doing some more deep sky images. Yeah, so let me see if I can move this one over and see anything else going on. Oh, the next Zoom meeting, that's in early June. Is that Nick Roos's? I can't tell you for sure, but we'll do a better job of putting it on the website so you can look all this stuff up. We'll get the schedule up there. And it'll be the first weekend in June. I said first and third, yeah. If you're a member of the Astronomical Society, on the fourth Saturday of the month, we always have our general meeting, and we always had them down at UMKC in Royal Hall. And I'm the vice president, and my job is to bring in all the guest speakers. And but now we have them via Zoom. We're doing our general meetings that way. So coming up at this next general meeting is going to be. That'd be on the 23rd, Saturday the 23rd, I think that's right. Michael Bakich, he was the senior editor of Astronomy Magazine, and now he's kind of he still works for them as a managing editor, but he moved to Arizona. Why would you move to Arizona where it's dry and the skies are dark? Maybe something like that. So anyway, he's going to be our speaker. And then let's see. Well, it'll always be on that fourth Saturday. So you can always look on the, but you got to be a member of the club to do that. But it doesn't cost too much. Check us out. And let's see. Anything else? Ah, okay. The question is the physical process known that explains why some galaxies are disks? And others are globular. Why aren't globular clusters? Well, globular clusters are just that, and they're older stars and they're smaller. They don't have as many stars in them. And maybe it's a matter of gravity and mass. Honestly, I can't tell you for sure. I know that the elliptical galaxies are always the older ones. So I have to think about that a little bit. I'm not seeing anything else. Well, I want to thank you all for coming tonight. We can, there's nothing else here. Let's see. That's it. So, I guess we will see you next time. And thanks for tuning in tonight. I hope I did okay. Wait, there's something else there. Oh, no, I got it. All right. Thank you. And we'll see you again.